Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, all on here. No normal FPL pod this week. Instead, we're bringing you a fireside chat with David Mooney. It's sort of a Manchester City deep dive. And then we'll be back next week with the normal FPL pod. Cheers. Support for this podcast comes from the patrons at patreon.com/FMLFPL. Okay, welcome to another FMLFPL Fireside Chat. I'm pleased to welcome freelance radio journalist, writer, host of both the Blue Moon podcast and the Athletic's Why Always Us podcast, David Mooney.
Hi, how you doing?
Everything's good. How are you on this, on this Monday after an insane Premier League weekend?
It's not bad. It's not bad. Yeah. I honestly, on Saturday evening, I was not that thrilled with a 1-1 draw at Leeds. Right. Then all of a sudden, by Sunday night, I was quite happy with it.
Yeah, not so bad, gaining a point on almost all of your rivals. So let's just start with a little bit of background of you and who you are. So have you always been a Manchester City supporter? How'd you break into radio and journalism and all that?
I started following City. I started following City when I was at primary school, which for international listeners is kind of like the first school you go to, so like 4 or 5 years old.
We call it elementary school.
Yeah. My mum and dad started taking me to a few games. The school used to get free tickets from City at the time. Any that they hadn't sold, they would then give to the schools in the area. And that was at about 93, 94-ish. And then I finally got a season ticket in the end in about 97. And it took me 6 years to watch City play in the same division in consecutive seasons because I got a season ticket. They went down, up, up, down, up. As they went down to the third tier, then back up to the Premier League in 2000. And then, yeah, it just kind of, it's just something that I kind of kept up. And then obviously, we got lucky in 2008 with the takeover, and things have just kind of changed. If you'd have told that kind of 5-year-old, 6-year-old in the mid 90s that the team he'd be watching would be, you know, pushing for all sorts of domestic honours, just as they were fighting relegation from the Premier League by there's an infamous story that I don't know if people know about. But City's first Premier League relegation, mm-hmm. on the final day, they needed to win to have any hope of staying up. And they needed other results elsewhere to go for them. Well, the results were going okay because everybody else was drawing. City were drawing as well. And the misinformation came from the crowd that a draw was enough. So they started holding the ball by the corner flag and wasting time.
Then
a couple of minutes later, Niall Quinn runs from the dugout going, actually, lads, we might need another one, so maybe get the ball into the box.
Oh my god!
Didn't get the win and ended up going down on the final day because of that. And it just
sounds incredible. Just not having dull. Internet and everything like that. Even I lust for that.
It was never dull.
Yeah, incredible. So I guess a good place to start is sort of just the Manchester City supporter perspective on the season so far, sort of the lay of the land. I'm curious where everyone was at in preseason. I'm sure it was a tough summer, tough Champions League knockout, and then it's been sort of up and down, right? I'm sure after the Wolves match, everyone was buzzing. Then after the Leicester match, everyone was, you know, the opposite of buzzing. And then after Leeds, unsure. Like, where's everyone at right now?
It's weird. I don't know, and I don't think many people know, because I don't think many people would be surprised if City went on to have a title challenge this season. But I also don't think they'll be surprised if they end up finishing 15 points off the title, because they're just so unpredictable at the moment. The Champions League was a disappointment back in August, it would have been. And I kind of said this to a couple of people on Saturday when City had full control of the game against Leeds. They were playing Leeds off the park for the opening 20-25 minutes. Oh, yeah. They got themselves 1-0 in front, and then Leeds gradually got back into the game. And there was a lot of people, a lot of neutrals who were saying things like, I mean, I can't believe City have let this game slip in the way that they have done. And I'm kind of like, well, if you can't believe that, then you've not been paying attention for about 18 months.
Right.
Because this is the thing that City have been doing for the last 18 months or so, since the start of last season. And it's not, I don't think it's a quick fix. So, yeah, the Wolves result was great. And, you know, City's opening day of the season, to go away to Molineux, you know, silence the
or just
kind of like keep Wolves in where they were and play them off the pitch for about an hour. And then, okay, Wolves came back into it for 10 minutes, but then City took control back again. Mm-hmm. It was a real confidence builder. And then it fell apart against Leicester. And it's like, well, have they actually solved the problems that they had last season? Or is it just going to be another one of those seasons? The saving grace, I think, this year is, judging by the results this weekend, I think everybody's going to be the same. I don't know if you're going to need 90 points to win the title this season.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't seem like it, especially with the European competitions coming back. Everyone's playing every 3 days. It's just insanity. But so, obviously, defensively is the problem. Maybe it's central midfield. Maybe it's the defenders themselves. Like, how do you see the Rodri and Fernandinho double pivot? Is that the future? Is that good enough to sort of shield the back line and regain control? It seems like Pep has, you know, he subbed Fernandinho off early and then he brought him on in the Leeds match to sort of wrangle control back. It's sort of like in between.
Yeah, it's tricky because Rodri is obviously the player that they want to anchor the midfield.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's good enough to do it on his own. He needs that presence like Fernandinho next to him. The problem then comes is that Fernandinho can't really be the future because he's, what, 34, 35 or so now? So he's not a long-term option for that position, whereas Rodri, you know, early 20s, is the long-term option.
Mm-hmm.
So I honestly don't know. I think it was telling that City weren't playing particularly well against Leicester when he took Fernandinho off, but they had control of the game. Leicester couldn't or weren't breaking through them with relative ease.
I mean, it was still 1-1, right?
It was 1-1, yeah. And then Fernandinho comes off and suddenly Leicester are breaking and breaking and breaking and there's so much space. Then again against Leeds, obviously Fernandinho doesn't start, but for that 20 minutes, City were fantastic.
Yeah.
So there was obviously some... It's not necessarily Fernandinho being in that position that is the complete saving grace. But then as soon as City lost control of the game, you know, we had 20, 25 minutes where both teams... It's like a basketball game. Both teams were going down the other end. And
it was crazy.
You know, almost scoring.
Yeah.
And then Guardiola goes, actually, we need control of this. Let's bring Fernandinho on. So I think a lot of fans feel a lot more comfortable when Fernandinho is there. But long term, he can't be there for the vast majority of City's games. So
he hadn't played midfield in a year before the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So I think the double pivot is probably a good solution to that problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced it always works with Rodri and Gundogan. With Rodri and Fernandinho, it's worked quite well this season.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see when Gundogan is allowed to play again after having COVID, whether he's going to be the sort of player that can step up the kind of performance. I mean, it's interesting as well. The year that City last won the title, 2019, they lost Fernandinho to injury in the running,
mm-hmm.
and Gundogan played that holding midfield position on mm-hmm. his own and did really well. So I don't know if that's a possible solution as well. Where that leaves Rodri, I've no idea.
Yeah, Rodri is such an interesting player. Almost makes me appreciate prime Fernandinho even more, because it's like, oh my God, it takes at least two players to replace what Fernandinho was doing.
And I tell you, there was a passage of play against Leeds where Leeds nearly scored. They broke away from midfield. It was a 4-on-4 in the second mm-hmm. half. And three times Rodri tried to foul his man in the way that Fernandinho would do. And three times he missed the foul.
Unreal.
And I was just thinking, if Fernandinho, like a couple of years ago, was playing that position on his own, then either City would have had the ball, right, or Leeds would have had a free kick on the halfway line. There'd have been no other option.
And
you think about who
played in front of Fernandinho with David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne. It's like he did it literally all on his own. It's so insane. But what I'm curious about, though, also with Rodri, is that we know that he wasn't the first choice. It was probably Jorginho. So Jorginho also wasn't going to replicate what Fernandinho was doing at the time, you know, defensively just dominating the center of the pitch. He's more of a passer and like a maestro or whatever. So I'm curious what the plan was, you know, what you think Pep's plan was for that position going forward, because we're talking about Rodri might not be able to do it on his own. I don't think Jorginho would have been able to do it on his own either. So what was the idea, to just evolve the team and the system and try and control the match more with more possession and more passing? Or what do you think that the plan was?
I think it kind of had to be that, because they missed out on Jorginho, as you say, and he's not the same player. They missed out on Fred as well, who ended up at Old Trafford. And he's not the same player as Fernandinho. Oh, he wouldn't do the same job.
There might not be another.
That's probably the issue. Yeah. So I suspect the double pivot is not a new line of thinking for Guardiola. I suspect he's had it in his mind for a while. Mm-hmm. And it might not necessarily be the personnel that's in City's team. It might just need a little bit of a tweaking with the setup. Right. Obviously, the way Guardiola plays, he likes midfielders and he likes attacking players on the pitch. Mm-hmm. So I think he's reluctant to have more than one player in that kind of anchor role, because as soon as he does, he loses one of his forward players.
Yeah, he loses a presser. Right.
Yeah, he's not going to play three at the back. So, I mean, I suppose he could play three at the back with the players City have now. You look at Ake, Laporte and Dias, the three of them could be a back four, could be back three, and then Walker, Mendy either side of that being a little bit further forward, and then I guess kind of like Walker and Mendy, instead of bombing on down the wings, they could tuck inside to become kind of like your holding players instead. So I don't know, that could be something he'll do. We've not seen a lot of that. So I don't know if that would be a long-term solution. Maybe I'm just talking myself into it, though, now.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's infinite options. It's like a Football Manager's dream, FIFA dream. But so what about the left-back position? I mean, Walker obviously has that nailed down at right-back. But what about left-back? Like, how do you see Mendy versus Cancelo? Is it Cancelo or Cancelo?
We say Cancelo, but it could be Cancelo.
Yeah, I think it's Cancelo. And then Ake is obviously in the mix a little bit, sort of like an in-between center-back, left-back. And there's rumors about buying another left-back. And for me, Mendy hasn't looked the same after the long-term injuries. And
He's not.
No. Yeah, he just lost some pace, and he was kind of run ragged against Leeds, I thought. But so how do you see the left-back position developing?
Again, it's completely up in the air. I mean, I don't really understand how City have got into this season without having addressed the left back issue.
Right.
They sold, or they let Gael Clichy go in 2017, brought in Benjamin Mendy, who obviously for a lot of money was going to be the first choice left back.
He was a superstar at first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was amazing at Monaco. He was amazing for the 10 games or so that we got before his first knee injury. And then, I mean, it's a meniscus injury, so you can understand players not coming back the same. Yeah. And ultimately, the question has always been, well, if Mendy can stay fit, and the answer is, well, he's not going to stay fit. It just isn't going to happen.
It's like saying if Gundogan can stay fit, and it's not a thing. It's just not a thing.
So they really needed to address that, and I know the transfer window is still open as we speak, but I don't suspect they're going to do it before 11 o'clock this evening.
But what about Cancelo? You don't see him as potentially the guy?
He was okay. He was okay as a left back, but he's definitely more of a right back. And City's problem has been trying to play through opposition teams at times and actually trying to create those chances in the last kind of 18 months. And when Mendy's on the pitch, he's fine at getting to the byline and getting a decent ball into the middle. When Cancelo's on the pitch on the left-hand side, then he's reluctant to use his left foot. So he's always trying to slow it down, come inside again, which Sterling's trying to do ahead of him anyway.
Right, and then, that makes sense, yeah.
So it's really struggled. And then, I mean, the other option, Zinchenko, he's... He's done okay, but he's not a left back. He's not a long-term left back. He's an attacking midfielder who is left-footed. So that's what it is. And Ake, you know, we haven't really seen him there. He's played there in his career. He plays there for the Netherlands sometimes. I don't know.
Maybe he's the
backup that Guardiola's got in mind for the reason they don't go into the market this summer. I just think it feels like a massive oversight that they couldn't address it in 2017 because Mendy got injured. 2018 they didn't try to. 2019 again they didn't try
and
to.
There was
third
Angelino,
season running.
There was Angelino, but that didn't last long.
Well, I mean, it's looked good at RB Leipzig, but without being too harsh on the lad, he just didn't cut it for City. There was so many times where
he plays wing back, right? So he doesn't really have the defensive responsibilities. I'm surprised it hasn't been addressed either. Like, you think about Jordi Alba or Alaba, or, you know, I'm just like, you know, that's a position of need. But so it's sort of in the FPL community, everyone jokes like Pep Roulette, like trying to figure out which Manchester City to get because there's so much rotation and everything. I'm curious, as a supporter, do you find that frustrating? Do you crave a like quote unquote settled 11, or, you know, with the amount of success that City have had and Pep has had, do you just blindly accept the way he chooses to set up the team every week is the best way to attack a team?
There's a line of thinking a friend of mine said that Guardiola often when he picks his team and he sorts his tactics, it's like a million Rubik's cubes spinning at light speed in his head, because you can't really understand what's going to happen.
It's a beautiful mind. It's just numbers spinning around.
Nobody knows what's going to happen. And so, like, there comes this point where, certainly from a fantasy league perspective, you can't bank on any of City's players playing other than, you know, Kevin De Bruyne, Sterling, Sergio Aguero when he's fit, Raheem Sterling. Even Sterling gets rotated out of the team from time to time. And when you see the starting lineup, I'm generally of the mind, what on earth is he doing here? Let's see what's going on, and then we kind of judge it after that. The only time I ever really get worried is when Raheem Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne are not in the team. I think City do go down a level when those two are not in the side.
Makes sense.
Or one of those two is not in the side. Mm-hmm. Everyone else you kind of take as a bit of a muchness, and they're all great players. They can all rotate around, so you kind of trust what they can do. City have been struggling recently by not having Aguero or Jesus as a centre forward.
Yeah.
And I think you're just going to kind of get through this time when they're both injured.
Yeah. And what about Mahrez? I'm curious about Mahrez because I'm just curious, why isn't he starting at right wing every week? It seems like, from a non-City supporter perspective, he seems like one of the best players, one of the genuine superstars in the team whenever he's on the pitch. I'm curious, is it a tactical deficiency? Is it he's wanted against specific teams only and not against other teams? Can he not press like Pep wants? Or is it just rotation to keep him fresh?
Well, he doesn't press quite as well as Bernardo does. Bernardo is, I mean, the classic example was that Liverpool game in 18-19 at the Etihad. Yeah. City had to win. And De Bruyne was injured. And it was almost as if he was injured. He was coming back from injury. He was on the bench. Mm-hmm. And it was almost as if Guardiola had said to Bernardo Silva, look, just give us an hour, absolute full pelt, run your backside off and just go. And then on the hour, he kind of looked over to the bench as if to say, I've done my running now. Is De Bruyne coming on? And it was like Guardiola went, 10 more minutes, just 10 more minutes, just run and run and run, 10 minutes. And then on 70 minutes, he looked across and went, I'm empty, that's it. And it's like Guardiola went, 5 more minutes, just give me 5 minutes. And he just ran and ran and ran. And he ended up breaking the Premier League record for distance run by a single player.
I'm a Liverpool supporter perspective, by the way. Yeah.
It was just insane that night.
Yeah.
So he presses a lot better than Mahrez does. I agree. I think Mahrez is brilliant. And I think he's the only one of City's forward line that offers something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
He's the sort of player that can slow it down and speed it up again at will. Whereas you look at Sterling's someone who wants the ball in behind and you're going to run in behind.
Right.
Bernardo's again a little bit tricky and can kind of weave his way in and out of problems. I don't really see Mahrez doing that. Mm-hmm. I see Mahrez kind of, you know, changing the tempo of the game and dragging players over wide and stuff. So I guess it's pressing a little bit, and I guess it's tactical more than anything else.
Just what about Torres? Does he sort of fit the system better in a certain way? What do you see out of Torres?
I've not seen a lot of him, to be honest. He looks, his first two games were a bit quiet. The League Cup game at Burnley, he was really, really good. He looks almost not a direct replacement for Leroy Sané, because I think Sané is a huge loss for City.
He is incredible, yeah.
But I just think he, again, Torres will offer something different. He seems to want to get in behind with pace in the same way that Sané used to do. Whether he'll play on the right coming in inside, or whether he'll play wide left and stretch the game that way, I'm not sure yet. He seems perfectly capable of doing either. I think City have played better when they've had Sterling wide right and Sané wide left. I'd like to see Torres wide left, Sterling wide right.
Yeah.
But again, Sterling's favourite position is on the left, cutting inside. So if that's the way it's going to be, then Torres is going to have to play on the right, isn't he?
Right. Like getting those tap-ins from Sané crosses, like how could that not be your favorite position? Yeah. But what about Foden? I think he's very interesting in Fantasy Premier League. He's the cheapest of all these guys by far. So, you know, everyone's always trying to get the cheapest option. And it seems like when he starts in the front three, he has a lot of goals in him. And, you know, he started in the midfield against Leeds. He was still very involved. Like, what's his best position? What's his future position? And what are his, best skills in general? Where do you see him in the future?
I like him just behind the centre forward. I don't like it when Guardiola puts him wide. I think he's not bad. I think you just lose a little bit of his input on the game. He played inside against Leeds and struggled a little bit, I thought. I think from a fantasy point of view, in a weird sense, there's only three City players that I think are actually worth the money that you have to pay for them. I think it's worth, it's always worth having Aguero in your team. It's always worth having De Bruyne in your team. And the only other player that I would shell out for at the moment is Phil Foden, just because of how cheap he is.
I thought you were going to say Sterling. I thought that was the obvious third. Yeah.
The issue with Sterling is he almost guarantees you a goal when he's on the pitch, but he's not, Guardiola was not opposed to rotating him.
Right.
Foden is going to be rotated, but at 5.5 million, he's so much more worth the gamble than anybody else.
Yeah, I'm curious why he hasn't played midfield more. I mean, I know I'm only hearing the sort of media perspective of everything, but he was sort of hyped up to replace David Silva, was he not? Free eight position next to De Bruyne, but he's only played there maybe twice or three times or something. I mean, is that something that he's lacking, or is Pep preparing him for something different, or was that never the plan in the first place?
I think I don't think Guardiola sees him as the direct replacement for David Silva, because Silva was someone whose use of the ball was a lot different to Foden. Silva could, he would be looking to pick a pass at all times. Mm-hmm. Foden is very much more, I need to get this ball towards the goal sort of thing. And Silva was very much, in the creative sense, was quite understanding of where to drag players and where to open the space and where the space would be. Foden's very, a lot more direct than Silva was. So I don't know if he sees him as the same sort of thing. I mean, from the journalists that I speak to that are closer to City than I am, because I mean, I'm not connected at all. Guardiola, I think, sees Gundogan a lot more like the player that will play the Silva role. He's obviously not as good a passer as David Silva was, and he can't do the same sort of things as Silva did. But he's the most like David Silva that was in the squad. Whereas I think Foden is a lot more kind of like that. He's a much more of a kind of number nine position player, where you get in behind, lay the ball on for the striker, maybe pick up a few goals from the edge of the box or break in late into the box sort of thing.
Once the Jesus injury came in, I actually was thinking back to the Real Madrid Champions League game where Foden sort of played that false nine and Jesus was left and Sterling was right. And I thought that was sort of the natural solution to the no center forward problem, and then Sterling started at center forward, and I was I found that really surprising. And so talk to me about Aguero and Jesus. So Aguero, it's kind of scary. I've loved watching Aguero for a long time. I've had him in fantasy every season I've ever played. And how much does he have left in the tank? It is a long-term, very serious injury. He's in his 30s now, and then is Jesus sort of the long-term solution behind him? Where do you see, what have you heard about the injuries and where do you see that?
Well, the injury is, this is the first Aguero injury that I have been particularly worried about.
Yeah.
Only simply because, again, like Mendy, it's a meniscus injury. And it's the sort of injury where, some players can bounce back and be as they were. Mm. Other players, as we've seen from Mendy, don't necessarily come back the same.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Aguero is good enough that even if he can't run very well anymore, you still stick him in the box and he'll get you 25, 30 goals a season.
Yeah.
But Mendy's issue is that he breaks down every 6-8 weeks or so, and mm-hmm. he needs 2 or 3 games out before he can come back in.
Right.
And that, I mean, it would be horrific if this was the beginning of the, I mean, maybe this is the beginning of the end for Sergio Aguero.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. Early 30s or so. But I kind of think no City fan wants to even contemplate that yet because
sorry to put you in that position.
It's just a horrid thought. I want to see him back on the pitch and see what he's like. I mean, it could be the latest reports are that he's back in training and he'll be close to being ready for after the international break.
Okay.
He traditionally takes about 6-8 games anyway after an injury to kind of get back into the flow. Mm-hmm. So I won't be too worried if he comes back and he starts slowly.
Right.
I think that the time to worry is if we're getting near Christmas and he's still kind of not really picked up full pace yet. I mean, this being said, he'll make me look a fool now. He'll come back after international break, score a hat-trick, and then everything will be back to normal.
Honestly, that would be so nice. that would take me out of pandemic times. It's like, the good old days.
There's nobody like him. That's the thing. You think of Premier League strikers, and, I mean, think of all the greats. Think of Alan Shearer.
I'm only about 10 years into my Premier League, fandom, but yeah.
But like, think of a great like Alan Shearer. He's got a typical goal. He's strong in the air, big headers, great in the box sort of thing. Thierry Henry, that typical Henry goal where he opens his body up and bends it into the far corner. Mm. And then I say, well, describe a typical Aguero goal. And I'm like, well, there isn't one because he has such a range of finishes. You know, he scores tap-ins. He scores, blasts from 30 yards. He's not great in the air, but he's scored a fair few headers for somebody his size.
My typical Aguero goal is near post, upper 90. That's where I'm just like, that's his money spot right there.
That's about the only one that I can say, that one is identifiably Aguero.
That's
everything
him.
Else is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I hope he comes back okay. And what about Jesus? Is he sort of... Are City fans happy with him? Is he sort of the long-term solution? In a post-Aguero world, is it sort of Jesus's team going forward? Where do you see that?
He splits City fans
a lot,
quite a lot. There's a lot who don't think he's up to the challenge and just don't rate him. I think he looks better when he is played wide coming inside from the left. Mm. Judging by his personality, he's someone like he's really hard on himself. He absolutely beats himself up when he misses chances, and so I can't imagine that if he misses a chance, that he's then in a good mindset to then be able to go on. Like the pressure he puts on himself must be huge.
And he misses a lot of chances.
Yeah, he does. there's no getting away from that. He does.
Yeah,
But then again, he scores some great goals as well.
Yeah.
So I like him, and I'm not that worried about what he can offer the team when Aguero's mm-hmm. gone. Mm-hmm. I do think when Aguero leaves, they do need to get in another striker.
For sure.
I don't think they can rely on Jesus to be the one to lead the line, pretty much every week in the way that Aguero does. The one thing I'd say for Jesus is, I don't see who is better than him who would come in for the role that he plays in the squad, because he knows that if Aguero's fit, he's not starting. And he knows mm-hmm. that if Aguero is fit and playing centre forward, if he is starting, mm-hmm. he's not going to be centre forward. How do you go out and get a striker? I mean, first off, is there a striker that is as good as Sergio Aguero out there? I'm not sure there is.
Right.
Second off, if you come to the tier below, are you going to get one of those strikers to come in and play the role that Jesus does?
Right. who's going to be better happy than, sitting on the bench. Yeah.
And are they going to be better than Jesus? And I'm not sure they are. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't see, if City sell Jesus, I don't see who they're replacing with, who isn't kind of the same sort of player.
Right. I agree with you. From my perspective, he's incredible, and you don't have to be a great finisher to be an incredible number nine. But
yeah.
What about Diash? I should have maybe brought this up when we were talking about defensive stuff, but you know, he's in, he immediately starts, he's there for like 2 days, barely trained, I'm sure, he immediately comes and starts, looks solid. Are you happy with him? It seems like he was maybe like third choice center back, but he's promising, he's young. What have you heard about him? What do you see in
him? I honestly don't know what to think, because they obviously wanted Koulibaly as their top target.
Yeah.
They didn't get him. They then switched their attention to Koundé, who is a different type of defender.
Right.
Didn't get him for whatever reason. And then it's almost like it came out of the blue. So I don't know how much they'd been working on the idea of Diash before, or as one of the options, or whether it was a case of, oh, hell, we haven't got our first two choices. Let's go and have a look at who we can get.
Let's get rid of Otamendi and see who we can get in. Yeah.
That was the other part of it. They needed somebody who would take Otamendi. That was part of the big transfer problem that they had at centre back. From what I've seen of him and from how he played against Leeds, he seems great, but I'm willing to kind of hold back and give it time, because Mangala looked great when he first signed for City. He's made his debut against Chelsea, kept Diego Costa quiet on his own all game.
Right.
And then in his second game, he scored an own goal and gave away a penalty and everything fell apart. So I don't know. I'm willing to give Diash time to settle in. Quietly confident that he looks good enough to kind of do the job at City. The problem is that I kind of think City's defensive problems are that Fernandinho, Rodri anchor position.
That's kind of why I started there, because I feel the same way. It reminds me, as a Liverpool supporter, when our center backs were just constantly isolated. It was more of a Rodgers problem than a Klopp thing, but it was just, you know, people are just complaining about Lovren and Skrtel and everything. But what do you want them to do? You know, it's 3v2 in the box, and
if you've got to defend one on one all the time,
you
then
can't.
At some point, you're going to make a mistake.
Yeah, you can't do that. Yeah. So yeah, I guess the last thing I kind of wanted to just talk about is just Pep himself. I think this is. Is this the longest he's ever stayed at a club, or he's approaching the longest he's ever stayed at a club? Like, how do you, you know, he's on the last year of his contract, I think. Do you think he's going to re-sign, stay longer? Who do you see, you know, replacing him in the future? Is he losing steam? Is he drained? Can he still evolve? You know, there's a lot of questions
to unpack, isn't there?
So much with Pep, yeah.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if he signed an extension. I think it's entirely on his terms. I think if he's open to staying, I think the club are happy to keep extending that contract until he wants to leave.
Yeah.
He himself, it's an interesting one for him, because City's effectively been built for him.
Right.
Since the takeover in 2008, by the sounds of it, the long-term aim was get Guardiola as the manager.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And maybe a bit later, actually, because he was still kind of early in his Barcelona career then, wasn't he? So might have been a bit later. But he's never going to have it this good anywhere else.
Right.
He's pretty much untouchable at City. What he wants, he generally gets.
Yeah.
He hasn't had that with transfers in the last kind of 18 months or so, but more often than not, he gets what he wants. Mm-hmm. So if he goes to Juventus, is he going to get that? Well, he's not, no. If he goes to wherever he goes next, is he going to get that setup? He's not.
No,
so
really not. Yeah.
It then becomes a question of how comfortable is he there? Is he happy that he can get more out of this team? Or is he just going to find it more and more frustrating that what he wants isn't going to happen?
Right.
And then, so that's the trade-off that he's got to make. City are happy to have him there as long as possible. I don't know about the fans generally. The fans generally are more than happy to see him stick around for longer.
Anything else would be psychotic.
Yeah. I mean, he's delivered, I mean,
everything.
The two greatest Premier League seasons that we have ever seen from any club.
Yeah.
So you can't knock the guy for that. Whether or not he's running out of steam is another interesting issue, because he always says that when he decides whether he wants to stay or whether he's going to leave, it's whether he can smell that the players want to carry on learning. Gotcha. And if you look at the performances of the last 18 months, you kind of go, well, is it a tactical problem? Is it a player motivational problem? Is it just the quality of player problem? What's been the issue? Why did City lose 9 games last season?
Yeah. Right.
So I think the question of whether he'll sign a deal might actually be left until, I mean, possibly even until January or so.
Right. Wow, that's crazy.
Just as late as possible. I don't see who can possibly come in to replace him. I think City fans, in terms of a replacement, I think if you were to offer them someone like Pochettino, who is free at the moment, I think they wouldn't say no to that. But I think if it's a decision between would you want Pochettino now or would you want Guardiola to stay for another season, that's a really, really difficult choice.
Yeah.
And I mean, my gut instinct to that would actually be I'd rather see Guardiola stick around for another season and then deal with what happens after.
As a Liverpool supporter, I'm like, go get Poch. It's like, I don't want Pep there anymore. Yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, the other side of it is, you know, this season, as crazy as it is, I mean, we saw the results over this weekend just gone.
Insane.
I mean, what if Guardiola ends up winning 3 trophies again this year? Because it's not out of the cards.
No,
does that then revitalise everybody and him go, actually, I'm going to sign another 3-year deal? And then all of a sudden he's become the longest serving manager since, Joe Mercer probably? I mean, he's already the longest serving manager since Tony Buck in the 70s. So.
Wow. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's wild. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, we go through managers quite a lot sometimes. If you look at the 90s, it's like an ejector seat in the manager's office.
I should have put that together when you were telling me. It was like up, down every season. So yeah, that makes sense. But
there was a season 96, 97. They had 5 managers between August 96 and January 97. Wow. 5 months, 5 managers.
That's very Watford of you. And very impressive. That's basically all. That's all of the City questions that I could possibly think of and cram into here. I'm just curious, how's your fantasy season going? What City players are in your team?
Not too badly, actually, but that's largely because I had a week 3 wild card. So
nice.
I had to do it all. I got a nice 69 points on the last weekend.
That's huge.
I fell on my feet with captain in James Rodriguez.
Oh my god! Wow.
2 goals and an assist.
Yeah.
And I've kind of made my peace with not really picking City players because I can spend that money elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And while City are a bit hit and miss, and while Guardiola's rotating his team a bit, I'm not losing out too much on the players who score points. My only real loss was I had Alexander Arnold this week, and you know, 90 minutes and 7 goals is somehow minus 1 point.
Yeah.
How it's only minus 1, I'm not really
sure. I know,
sure, but,
yeah, that's a more complicated question. I went in with Van Dijk and Trent Alexander Arnold, so combined negative 3. It was great. It went great. Everything's great.
Just looking at my leagues, I'm near the top of all of them, so I'm doing all right. I mean, that will fall apart because traditionally there's one that we play where we all pay to get into it, and then we kind of divide up the winning top 6 get money at the end of it. I've been in that for 5 years. There's about 30 players in it, and the top 6 get money. And I've never once won any money back. So
this might be your year. Who knows? I think it's probably a good place to wrap up. David, where can people read your work, hear you speak, follow you on social media, all that stuff?
Best bet is to I'm not very imaginative soul, so my Twitter name is @DavidMooney, and look up Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter as well. And if you are a subscriber of The Athletic, then Why Always Us is our podcast on there. If you want to subscribe to The Athletic for £1 right now, then you can sign up doing that by using the code ManCityPod as well.
Wow, £1. That's a good deal.
It's super, mad, isn't it? Yeah.
It's crazy. I'm a huge fan of The Athletic. Definitely recommend it to everyone. Super happy we're able to put this together. Thanks so much for coming on.
Anytime. I just hope that my fantasy league season continues as it started.
Good luck. Check us out at fmlfield.com. Follow us on Twitter at fmlfield. Support us at patreon.com/fmlfield. Subscribe, rate, review, and cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.